Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
Hey, this is Real Nerds Podcast, the best movie podcast on the internet. I am Ryan, and I am joined by Brad.
Hey.
Hey-dee-ho. Every week, we see a new movie and we podcast our experience to the world. This week, we saw Godzilla. Is it X-Kong? I don't understand the title.
It's like one of those Batman v Superman things. I think it's optional. I think X implies a team up, whereas versus, is like, they're against each other.
Oh, wait, dude, I totally figured it out. This week we saw Godzilla multiply Kong, the new empire.
Godzilla times Kong.
Yes. Genius. Stay tuned, and we'll recommend the film or not. Play the trailer, then spoil it. We also talk about the movie news of the week and films we've watched throughout the week that we think we should talk about. This is our 13th year, Brad.
It is. We just moved into a new volume of episodes with this one.
Nice.
Full steam ahead, I guess.
Yeah. Be a little more enthusiastic. 13 years of every week listening to me. You are so blessed.
13 years. I can't believe it. This is so much fun.
There we go. That's what I like to hear.
I'm struggling
fake
a little
enthusiasm.
Bit because I have a cold question mark. I don't know what's going on with my sickness right now.
You do sound a little sick.
Yeah. I feel fine otherwise, but it's not like a allergy congestion thing. It's like I've known for like 3 days, like this feels like I do when I get sick, but it's just not happening fully. Mm-hmm. So Yeah,
mine are always, they start my sinuses, and then when my sinuses start hurting, then I know it's going to happen.
Yeah, mine starts with a sore throat, so like one that's on fire. So yeah, it kind of went away yesterday, so I was like, cool, I beat it, but now I'm just like, I sound like this, so I'm worried like...
the virus in you is like...
like a new phase, it's like mutating, yeah. So it's like... kind of need to do film explosion on Saturday, and it's like Friday it's going to hit, and I'm going to be like just totally bedridden.
But I chose the number one movie. speaking of film explosion, we are doing film explosion 1984, Sunday, April 7th. Send us your list of your favorite films of 1984 so we can share them on the podcast.
Sunday, travel back to 1984 for the best films of that year.
According to Real Nerds Podcast. A really cool year for movies. I actually struggled how I was going to put my list together because I always boil it down to which ones do I watch the most, and in that order, because I guess in my mind that means I enjoy them more than the other films. But there could have easily been 20 movies on my top 10 list if we did a top 20.
Yeah, 84 is one of those great years, and I did most of my list years ago, like I said before, and I did relook at it and be like, is this still what I feel? Because, like, yeah, this is, like, it's, like, a difference of, like, one rank, type thing of just, like, where does it really fit? And at this point, I've lived with these movies for, like, 40 years, so it's just, like, you know, none of them have the same impact they did like 10 years ago to me, but you know, they're all awesome, you know. So
yeah, it's a fine line.
Yeah,
but this week we're not gonna live in the past. This week we saw Godzilla X Kong. Brad, do you recommend the latest monster mashup?
Sure, why not? if you liked, you know, the Skull Island and whatever the last one was called, I think it was just Godzilla times Kong. yeah, it's more of the same. You know, CGI monsters fighting each other. Yeah.
I thought it was really fun. I think there is a charm to these type of movies. And what I respected about this movie, I'll talk about it in quote unquote spoilers, but it felt like the writers and the director are like, yeah, fuck it. Let's see what happens if we throw this in here. Like, who cares? Let's defy all logic, even when in a monster universe, and let's just make it this movie how we want to. But yeah, it was fun. I thought it looked great. Yeah.
Look, fun movie. Expensive for sure.
I'm going to call it Godzilla Kong because I hate the X in it. Just like I hate the V in Batman v Superman. I just call it Batman Superman. Here's a trailer for the latest adventure of Godzilla and Kong.
For centuries, there was harmony. The Titans were the guardians of nature, and the great apes became the protectors of humanity. We've discovered a signal. She can feel it. Kong, Godzilla, they can feel it too. Something is coming. Something even they're afraid of.
You feel like going for a ride?
Thought you'd never ask.
Just try not to swallow your tongue.
What? Is that a mini Kong?
Oh my god.
That's not just a signal. That's a call for war.
What is that?
Can't stop this on his own.
He won't be alone.
The last time those two met up, it was almost the end of Kong.
They don't have to like each other. They just have to work together.
Now I have seen everything.
We've made some minor augmentations.
Oh.
I'm not sure exactly the time frame of this movie since the last Godzilla and Kong movie, where they fought each other, and then we discover that there was a hollow earth. But Godzilla is still cruising around and destroying shit like he doesn't care. But he's protecting the earth from other titans. Kong is in Hollow Earth looking for more Kongs, and there's humans in it, and their story is to make sure Godzilla doesn't kill more people, but he does, and that Kong stays in center of the Earth. And Kong stumbles across more apes like him, and when he does this, it activates Godzilla, because the Scar King, or I think that's his name, leader of the bad apes, and who rides a titan who shoots ice, isn't going to try to come to the surface world. So now Godzilla is absorbing all the nuclear power he can to prepare for battle. And Kong lures Godzilla to center Earth, Hollow Earth, and then they fight a lot. And that's the movie.
That's the movie. Yeah, it's fun. Like you said before, it feels like they just realized, hey, I think people just hate the human stories in these, so let's reduce that and just give Kong like a robotic arm. And I was disappointed that Godzilla doesn't really get a lot of screen time in the movie. Like, he naps in the Colosseum and then goes to the Arctic to recharge and kill like another Titan, and then shows up at the end to do the badass fight scene.
Yeah, so it was definitely a Kong movie.
Yeah.
And then, because the first 20 minutes is literally him in Hollow Earth running around and hunting and beating up monsters.
You know what I thought was a great movie? That. Like, no dialogue. Just, I understood what Kong was thinking and emoting. Yeah. And, like, I understood the story. Like, when he goes into the lair of the other Kongs, like, no one's saying anything, but you understand what's going on.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. The movie looks incredible.
Yeah, looks expensive for sure.
My kid, we couldn't stop laughing when he took that little baby Kong and was using him as a weapon.
Yeah. Which, halfway through, I was like, oh man, I just now realized they worked in Son of Kong into this movie.
Yes.
But yeah, it's hilarious that he's just beating the other Kongs with the kid.
Yeah. But you're right. Those moments, the characters were animated and brought to life so well that just their like and facial expressions and their head nods, you understood exactly what was going on.
Yeah. Like, this movie could have been completely dialogue-less and just followed Kong, and probably would have been like super interesting, because yeah, the humans are just there to explain what's going on screen for like the dummies in the audience.
I know, it's, and you know, they're fine in it, but this is the second movie I've seen in a month where some lady explains what's happening to us for us. In Imaginary, it was handled really clumsily. In this one, it's a little clumsy, but not as bad. It's Rebecca Hall reading hieroglyphics and telling us the whole story.
That's a good thing she has two PhDs.
Yeah, but you really don't need. I get it. Like, I get that Scar King is holding a titan and he's manipulating it with this,
magic rock.
Yeah, magic rock. Like, I get it. Like, I understand what's happening. And he wants to go to the surface world, and Godzilla is going to stop him. Like, I don't need to be told that. I understand.
Yeah.
You know, I guess it was a big deal that Mothra shows up. Again, looks incredible. The fight in Egypt was awesome.
R.A.P. the pyramids. The weirdest thing about these movies is, like, you know, we're in the present day, even though there's like hover conversion on things. We're in present day, and there's been tons of monsters attacks in all these movies, and yet the humans just go about their like normal commerce day, like no big deal. Like,
I know.
Like, they're never gonna get attacked, and then they do. And it's just like, you'd think at this point, like, there would be no society like structure. You know, there'd be no borders, there'd be no commerce. Like everyone would just be like selling their property because like it's no one can insure it at this point.
Well, it'd be, see, this is why I don't make movies. Because if I was making this movie, and I mean, the image of Godzilla sleeping in the Colosseum looks cool. And when he steps out and he destroys like the wall, I would have cut to some guy on the ground and go, dude,
excuse me.
Yeah, excuse me. Like, you have to destroy the Colosseum. Because they did. They also destroyed the Pantheon and like,
Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah, fucking Godzilla doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, no evacuation time for that city. Everyone's fucking dead.
She's fucking dead. Because like, you know, they show up on the beach for the final fight. All those people on the beach are dead.
Yeah,
like just dead.
And then they just like obliterate all those buildings like further inland.
I mean, yeah. I guess it's you know, population control.
that's Monarch's true job is to
draw
titans to cities they want to destroy.
That'll be in the next one when the CEO of Monarch is revealed as a guy who just wants to like eliminate world population, like Thanos.
Like, I forget, isn't that what they already did in one of the past ones? I don't know.
I don't remember. I don't think so, but
like when Mothra came out, I was like, didn't like Mothra die in the last one? That like that was the tragic part of the movie.
Like, I can't remember.
Sacrifice yourself. Yeah.
I mean, I have them all.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Because the steelbooks for all of them are really cool. And you know, Godzilla Kong or Godzilla King of the Monsters, I think is the one where Mothra does come out, but it's a bad guy. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not Mothra. Maybe it's Mothra and we're just mixing them up.
Maybe. Yeah. It was like,
I'm not as well versed on the early monster movies.
Also like they go through the trouble of, you know, Godzilla's assignment is to like recharge in the Arctic, but like what did getting that power really do that it was different? I'm not quite sure.
He turned pink. I don't know.
It's pink instead of blue.
Yeah, and why are like jets and stuff still firing at him? Like,
yeah,
and why? I mean, he's just inhaling nuclear power. Okay, we already know that jets and helicopters are not effective against him.
Yeah, I know some of them were just like there to, you know, keep a camera on him, but yeah, firing at this point, firing on Godzilla is pretty dumb.
I mean, it looks cool, I guess. I mean, when they lost the gravity, the camera work and the action was pretty great at that point.
Yeah.
But you know, Kong's super arm, I love that it's conveniently in this outpost. And that Dan Stevens character is able to pilot some sort of flying machine that we haven't seen before, but it's just perfect for dropping this glove right on Kong.
Yeah. Also,
I hope he doesn't reject it. And then all of a sudden he's just fucking ripped.
Also the journey back to the, him walking back to that spaceship or whatever, was a lot quicker than the journey they took, like leaving it.
Sure was. He says, I'll be right back. And he's literally right back.
Yeah. He's a marathon runner. Yeah. Yeah. Also, where's the sun in Hollow Earth? Like, where's that light coming from?
It's coming from the lava spewing so high into the air that, it produces UV lights as well for all the plantation.
I guess. That whole lava cavern just made me think of Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
When you're underground in the lava areas and, like, you walk close to it and just, you know, without the armor and you start heating up. That's pretty gnarly. Right. And you kick that one ape into the lava.
Yeah.
In front of his kid.
Little mini Kong's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that kid was a little prick at the beginning.
Yeah.
So was his dad. Learned. Yeah, but it's fun. Like, I don't mind these kind of movies. I understand what I'm getting into when I watch them.
Yeah, I mean, they're supposed to be dumb fun. You're only sitting there waiting for the monster fight anyway, which exactly. was cool. Like that final fight in Rio de Janeiro with the, you know, what, three Titans, two Kongs.
Yep. No, four. Because that ice one, it would have been cooler if Kong would have held up that Scar King. I kept on thinking he's going to freeze him and then Godzilla is going to blast him with his atomic breath and just, you know.
Oh, that'd be cool if they both killed him at the same time. That'd be awesome.
And then yeah. it'd snow like pink snow.
That was pretty gnarly in the beginning when Kong like rips that whatever beast in half. And like, of course, it's green blood that has to drip on him because it's PG-13.
Yeah. Badass. I mean, they stole it from Prey, but, you know, it's still cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was awesome. And like I said, the characters, the monsters in it look incredible. Sure, it cost a lot of money, and a lot of people didn't go home for a couple months.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hey, big movie news this week.
It's real news.
Probably the biggest news is Louis Gossett Jr. passed away. My cousin always loved him in Iron Eagle. It's my cousin's favorite movie, so he is always a part of my life growing up.
Yeah, I just saw him in, I think, of The Color Purple he was in, the remake. And, like, I didn't recognize him until the credits.
Yeah, I was reading an obituary on him. He started in his teens acting. And so he had a career of 70 years. That's pretty awesome. Of course, he won an Oscar for An Officer and a Gentleman. I'm pretty sure the first time I saw him, though, was in Jaws 3D. he's the, like, owner of SeaWorld, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was just in Outlaw Johnny Black, too. We just saw that.
Correct. Yeah, what a career.
Yeah. Yeah.
And always a dude who was on screen and you just, you know, he commanded. He had that presence about him, you know?
Yeah, he was in charge.
Yeah. Although it's sad that when someone passes away, he lived to be 87. And let me see how many films he was in. He was in 200 titles, according to IMDb, as an actor. Two as a producer. I mean, director and... 14 as a producer, so he was quite the the man who dabbled in everything, and he was on stage too. That's where he got his start, was in on stage.
Yeah, I forgot he's also in the original Punisher with Dolph Lundgren.
Oh shit, that's right. God, I haven't seen that movie in forever. And so the only thing I really remember about that is him riding his motorcycle in the sewers always.
Shout needs to put that out.
Yeah, they do. And that's the news story I have this week, unless I missed something.
Bottoms is coming to Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, from Kino.
I was so excited when I saw that because it was such a travesty that it wasn't available. I mean, I could watch it on Prime, but I'd rather have the Blu-ray and have special features.
You know what's funny is after all these months, I did watch it on Prime, and the next day you sent me that. I was like,
really?
I did it. I
willed
change.
It into existence.
Yeah. I was like, should I re-up Prime like from some like delivery deal. So I was like, cool. I don't have to like pay it like as a separate rental. And, yeah.
Nice. The only bummer is Kino Lorber sometimes will announce stuff and it doesn't come out for a year. They did that with Kindergarten Cop. Yeah. They announced it a year before it came out.
Yeah. There's something else too. What is it? I'm still waiting on things like a Van Damme movie. Oh, Sudden Death, they announced like 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, they're an independent distributor. So one day you'll just be on social media and they'll say, coming next month, Sudden Death. But I'm okay with it because usually they do new 2K or 4K scans from camera negatives. And they do usually a great job. I just... got 7 Blu-rays from them because they have this spring sale going on.
Yeah.
And they're each like $7. And if you get over $50, it's free shipping.
I took advantage of it too, my friend.
Nice. I got totally goofy movies this time. Like Amazon Women Love, I forget what it's called. But it's some woman in a leopard bikini who has a spear. I'm like, yeah, fuck it. Who cares?
Yeah. For $6.99, I was like, I'll try this. Who cares?
Yeah, that's what I did.
You know, I hate it. You know, that's a pretty good price for a Blu-ray.
Yeah. I do check on Blu-ray.com on some of them to see, you know, if there's like some sort of hidden gem. And one that I got that I'm kind of excited to check out, it's called Stunt Rock.
Oh, and that's the one I got.
Did you get it? Nice.
Yep.
Did you read about it? It's like some Australian stunt movie, and I guess the stunts in it are so insane. And one of the bonus features is a stunt performer talks about how deadly it was.
Yeah, it was like at the Alamo, I think, last year, and I missed it. So,
oh, nice.
When I saw Campbell, I was like, oh, here's my chance to watch it. And it's like, it was also featured. I have this documentary called Not Quite Hollywood, mm-hmm. which is all about the Ozploitation films. And I guess, yeah, that was part of it. So I'll,
Nice. Yeah, because I also got Billy the Kid versus Dracula, Code of Silence, and Force of One, which are two Chuck Norris movies. Because again, it's, oh man, one was $8.49. Damn it. But yeah, I'll take a chance on them because sometimes you get really good ones that like sneak through.
Yeah, I got the Jetsons movie.
Yes.
Divorced Dad, which is a like a web series or like a series made by the guys who did like the Psycho Goreman and stuff.
Oh, I've never even heard of it.
Yeah. And then Phantom of the Opera, the nice. Like original 19.
Oh yeah, I got that one the last time they had. Well, maybe last year when they had a sale. The Blu-ray is awesome. It has tons of special features on it because it's a special edition one, right?
Yeah, I think
nice.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the one that's like a painted kind of cover.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice.
Like, yeah, I saw it in Colorado Springs like last year for Halloween because like some indie film thing. I was like, yeah, I should just have that because like it wasn't great, but you know, it's a cinema like icon. So
yeah, it's one of my 150 favorite films. One of the reasons is because how important it is.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, it's, you know, a 1921 silent film, so it's 100 years old. And there's some caveats to it, but I think overall, like, the makeup effects and the performance by Lon Chaney is great in it.
Yeah, I'm curious about the special features, so we'll check those
yeah,
out.
They're good.
Yeah, so, yeah. Nice.
Hey, we watch films throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, yeah, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, what'd you watch this week?
A lot of stuff, but I think the only thing I really want to talk about is there's a Weird Al documentary on Amazon, I think it was. Was it Amazon or YouTube TV? I don't know. I don't remember where I watched it. But it's called Weird Al Never Off Beat. And
yeah, I haven't heard of it.
Sucks.
Oh, well.
it's
not just a clever name.
Like, I don't know, 10 minutes and I was like, I got to look up what other people are saying about this because this seems weak. And then, like, I read the reviews and they're like, you know, this seems like a documentary generated by AI. And I'm like, it does seem like a documentary generated by AI. And I'm guessing the script was like, it's like reads. I haven't looked it up, but I'm sure if you looked up Weird Al's Wikipedia page, they probably copied and pasted it and sent that right to the, because I thought the voiceover was AI,
mm-hmm.
But in the credits, it's a real woman. You can look her up. She's done voiceovers for other famous things, but she doesn't. I guess no one corrected her because there's like parts in the script where it'll say like he's won 7 Grammy or like 7 albums Grammy 7, like the words are rearranged and like his song Word Crimes. She says it's World Crimes. So yeah, they shipped off the dialogue for her to record, and they just took it back and didn't like double check anything.
Wow. So it, I'm guessing it's not an authorized biography.
I don't think so. And there's a lot of like stock footage in place of things. And, you know, the part where they get to where he like goes on Tom Snyder Tonight or whatever to do his first like studio performance. Instead of showing footage from that, they just cut to him like doing an interview at the Last Action Hero premiere. You're just like, what is going on? Like, what does this have to do with that?
It's hilarious.
It almost seems like they used an AI thing to like steal footage from others, like the behind the music or whatever, and like like all that, and then re-edit it, and then yeah, it's just a mishmash of clips from other things you've seen before, and then like a lazily written script about his life that just jumps around constantly. It doesn't adhere to like chronology. Yeah, it's literally like feels like they just copied and pasted his Wikipedia page and then told the computer to make a documentary out of that. Because yeah, and then there's just like random like stock footage of like palm trees because they're in California. Or like at one point where they're like talking about, what was it going on at the end? I think it's like his Walk of Fame star. Like there's just like an insert of like a camera on the ground spiraling, so you like see the trees rotating. You're just like, what? Why is this shot in here?
It's art, man. It's art.
Yeah, it's bad.
And they don't even need it. They already released the 100% true story and Weird, the Al Yankovic story.
Right? Like that's the most authentic biography you can possibly do on Weird Al.
I know. And I don't know why someone try to make another one.
So yeah, that was pretty bad. Oh, I guess I saw the new Roadhouse. That's a new thing.
Roadhouse.
With Jake Gyllenhaal. And that's a movie that's been like lambasted in the critics. I thought it was okay. Like I didn't mind it. Yeah, it's not great, but neither is the original movie. Like you know, it's not
the original movie is badass because it's so over the top. That it'd be hard to remake that style of movie.
I mean, it's definitely a different vibe. But
do they have a blind band, rock and blues band that plays at a bar?
I think so. I think they don't outright say they're blind, but there's like three or four acts in that cage that. They could have been blind. And yeah, there's one point where the bar empties out and they're still playing. So maybe they don't know that people left because they're blind. So that might be a nod to that. but the villain or the like the biggest douchebag from the Friday the 13th remake is the villain in it.
Oh, sweet. So fucking love Trent.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to like, oh, yeah, that guy. Because he's a, you know, super sadistic douchebag in this one. And yeah, the
I should be typecast as that.
Yeah.
You need a douchebag.
Yeah. Get out the Rolodex, a douchebag. Hollywood douchebags. Who could play this?
Good looking blonde haired guy. Perfect.
So yeah, I didn't mind it. I thought it was kind of fun. Oh, I guess in the Spine of Night I saw, which is like a kind of like a swords, like a throwback to like the Ralph Bakshi animation stuff where it's like super violent. You know, Conan, the Barbarian style.
Yeah.
Stuff like, yeah, animated people getting like hacked in half. And yeah, meanwhile, sweet. There's like tons of like animated nudity and,
Just weird... like Ninja Scroll.
Yeah. But like, yeah, the animation's a little sloppier because it's like that rotoscoped Ralph Bakshi animation.
Gotcha.
And the story is like, I'm not sure really what it's trying to do other than like, this power exists over generations and all these different eras try to like stop this one evil dude who stole the flowers. And yeah, it's like story's not that interesting, but you know, as far as like a classic throwback to that style of cinema is kind of cool. So yeah, what'd you watch?
I just watched a few things. Did I talk about Candyman Day of the Dead last week?
No.
Okay, because I forget where I started watching stuff this week. Candyman Day of the Dead is a third Candyman film that was straight to video. And those were those ones that when you went to Blockbuster, you know, in the mid to late 90s, and they would have really cool covers and you'd get them and you'd be disappointed by what you watched. And This is definitely one of them. Tony Todd is still great as the Candyman, but it's an extremely limited budget, and the movie is just okay. The cool part is on the special features, Tony Todd talks about how the movie is a piece of shit, so it's cool. because it's funny because he said, you know, it's an okay movie and it has its fans. That's his really nice way of saying it's a piece of shit.
Definitely yeah, it was a TV movie.
If there wasn't tons of tons isn't the right word, but there is a lot of gore in it, and some of it's pretty badass. Like he jams his hook through this dude's throat and rips his face off. But it's, you know, it's kind of far in between because they don't have a budget. And the rest of the time is, I don't know. It's okay. It's not great, but it's not so horrible. It's unwatchable. It's in that mid-90s straight to VHS style. So just know what you're getting into. And if you get the Vestron series, that's a lot of their stuff. It's still fun. That's just what it is. I also got the 4K Ring collection from Scream Factory, which I love the first Ring movie. I think it's really good. Naomi Watts is really great in it. Did you see that with me in the theaters, Brad?
Pretty sure I did.
Because I always remember, I can't remember if you were there too. I remember Adam and Cliff were there.
Yeah.
And the reason I know this is because I took Cliff home, and I'll never forget when we left. It was foggy and rainy. Like, oh, that's kind of weird. And
oh yeah, the chair on the road.
Yeah. Remember, and Cliff lived in that like really dark neighborhood, and the chair randomly in the middle of the road.
So, yep, upright.
That movie always stuck with me because of that. And it's still really good. Ring 2 is okay. It suffers from not as good director, which is a bummer because it's the director of the original Japanese film. And when I was watching the making of it, he got kind of hamstrung by the Hollywood machine that it made, because the first one made so much money. And of course, when producers interject themselves into how the movie should be, it usually suffers. And you could tell there's conflicting visions in the film, where he even talks about the best thing on this set is there's an hour and 45 minute documentary of making of the series, which is really great. And he talks about that, you know, how he wanted Samara in the original series. She was more of a ghost. In the American version, she's kind of like a zombie ghost, which doesn't align with with the Japanese culture. And he struggled making the movie for an American audience because he didn't know exactly what the American people wanted. And then the producers had him do this other stuff. And there's this weird transition thing where they're trying to be scary, but it isn't quite scary because it's too CGI from, you know, the mid 2000s. So it lost a lot of subtlety, I think, which he was going for in the film. But it's still not a bad movie. It's just a step back from the first one because Gore Verbinski he's a great director. And then the one I haven't seen is the third one called Rings. Have you seen that one?
No.
Yeah, it's not good. I don't know. They try to give way too much backstory to Samara, which I think sometimes can hurt, the legend of who she is.
Yeah, it's less scary if there's no mystery to it.
Yeah, and then the cinematography was so dark. And I don't know what they're trying to do with the effectiveness of it, but it'd be so dark, it'd only light up maybe a quarter of the actors' faces, and it'd be that ring color where it's like a kind of a bluish or like a greenish color. So there was not a lot of detail, even on a 4K disc until it would be daytime, and then you go, oh wow, this movie has lots of like colors in it, but then it cut to nights or darkly lit things and it lost a lot of it. And the characters were so dumb in this one that it just irritates me. the premise is that the girlfriend doesn't want her boyfriend to die, so she watches the video. Because it's, you know, the way you stop yourself from dying from the ring or Samara is you make a copy and show it to somebody else. And so she didn't want her boyfriend to die, so she watched it. I go, let the fucker die. And her boyfriend was douchey, and his name was Holt. But there is some cool parts in it. The ending is interesting. But it came with a set. I really wanted it for Ring 1 and Ring 2. And I didn't know there's a two-hour documentary on it. And the documentary is awesome because it starts with the actual Japanese version. And I didn't know it was a book before they made it a movie. So learn something new. And the last thing I watched was Immaculate, which is the Sydney Sweeney nun movie. She goes to a monastery in Italy, and while she's there, she becomes pregnant, which is the immaculate part. Even though, as it was happening, I go, oh, I know she gets pregnant. There's this scene in it where, I don't know, I won't spoil it, but it's so obvious that it really takes away from the mystery, quote unquote, leading up to what happens. There's some pretty gnarly stuff in it. It's not the best horror film I've seen this year. That's still stop motion. But I mean, for a Monday morning, I had nothing else to do. It's not bad. I mean, it's pretty gory in some parts, and all the actors in it are really good, and it's shot really well. So if you have nothing else to do, it's not bad.
Right on.
That's what I watched this week. Next week is Filmplosion 1984. We ain't afraid of no ghosts, but we are afraid if you don't send us your list.
Oh, nice.
Until next week, we'll see you at the movies.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast, Twitter and Instagram at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!